Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1877 with a release date of August 2nd, 2013 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Hams in Hawaii go on alert for Pacific Storm Flossie. India recognizes three hams as rescue radio heroes. More than 400 attend ARRL-sponsored hurricane readiness webinar. Vandals topple a radio tower that's home to at least one ham radio repeater. Monitoring times to cease publication at year's end, and a lighthouse in the middle of the Australian desert will take part in the International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1877, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
Ham radio was ready when Pacific Storm Flossie took aim at the island state. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with what we know so far.
There was a report of an individual that had a hole in the roof that was touched with lightning. We had some trees that fell, and that's about it. There wasn't really any extensive flooding, no huge storm surge. There was rain, yes, but no extensive flooding. So we lucked out in this tropical storm.
That's Clement Jung, KH7HO, who is the state of Hawaii's amateur radio Skywarn coordinator, summing up the severe weather event that was called Tropical Storm Flossie. According to Jung, amateur radio operators across Hawaii were involved in various aspects of rescue radio operation and were ready to respond after the Central Pacific Hurricane Center issued an advisory announcing that the storm had crossed longitude 140 into the Central Pacific hurricane region. Flossie approached Hawaii from the east, heading almost due west at 20 miles an hour. In anticipation of the storm's arrival, plans had been underway between the National Weather Center's Skywarn and Hawaii State Civil Defense to coordinate a joint net on the statewide VHF repeater system. Its purpose would be for the passing of storm information to the National Weather Service Honolulu Forecast Office.
About 8 o'clock on Monday, July 29th, that's when the action started to come up. The Central Hurricane Center meteorologists were concerned about this development that was over Maui and approaching Lanai, Molokai, and then Oahu. It was a development that was 60,000 feet high and was generating a lot of lightning and thunder. And they were concerned about more rain and hail and possibly tornadoes.
Meteorologists also requested reports of heavy rainfall to confirm what they were seeing on their radar. These reports were provided by amateur radio operators on the Skywarn net, supplemented with messages relayed by cell phones, text messages, and social media such as Facebook. This was the first tropical cyclone in Hawaiian waters that encountered the volcanoes on the Big Island. As predicted, the mass of these mountains disrupted the circular motion of the storm, causing a portion to separate and head around South Point. It also forced the main portion of the storm to head north, where it encountered the mass of Mount Haleakala on Maui. The combined action of these three volcanoes caused the moisture to deflect upward, forming thunderhead clouds up to an estimated 49,000 feet. The cold temperatures at that altitude caused the moisture to form ice and rain, which fell as heavy downpours on the islands of Maui and Molokai. All in all, Flossie did not wreak the damage that some had predicted, and with the statewide ham radio network of in-tide repeaters using the All-Star Network, communications was uninterrupted throughout the event. KH7HO says that it's the cooperation among these various groups that makes Hawaii's ever-ready emergency response possible.
No matter what hat we wear, we all work together, whether we're Aries, Racies, State Racies, DM Racies. That's the whole concept, that we have limited resources here. We're an island state, and we all have to work together, what we call Ohana, family in Hawaiian.
For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
Flossie faded the morning of July 30th thanks to winds that broke layers of the storm apart. The ham radio operators who were part of the first response effort say that they're ready for anything that Mother Nature might send their way. Three hams in India have been recognized for their efforts in the Uttarakhand flood relief operations. The newspaper The Hindu says VU3GDS, VU3HVD, and VU3HBT have all been honored for their contributions to public safety during and in the aftermath of the Uttarakhand storms and flooding. All three are from the city of Bangalore and were among the first to reach Uttarakhand and establish a communications link from remote areas. During the flood, the three were instrumental in establishing communications with the local district administration in the Himalayan terrain to enable better coordination for civilian relief. Communicating with the Disaster Control Center established at Dehradun, they relayed messages to the local district administration, which took appropriate measures to reach out to those stranded or in need of rescue. The newspaper is calling the three heroes. The complete story in The Hindu is online at tinyurl.com/india-ham-heroes. An AM radio outage takes place after an earthquake hits New Zealand. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, has the details.
Radio New Zealand's AM radio emergency notification service was unable to broadcast civil defence messages for about 20 minutes after the 6.5 magnitude quake on Sunday evening, July 21st. Radio New Zealand spokesman John Barr said that the problem was caused when a fuse went out in the Porirua coastal suburb of Tītahi Bay. Barr said that the company had a technician there quickly to rectify the situation. He noted that the outage was isolated to the AM broadcast operation and did not hamper any other civil defence capacity. Barr added that Radio New Zealand had continued to operate on their FM frequency and on television through Sky and Freeview. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF in Nelson, New Zealand.
New Zealand authorities recommend that the public tune to the civil defense recommended frequency of 101 FM. That's the standard FM emergency notification frequency around most of that country. A record number of individuals interested in emergency preparedness were on hand for the 2013 ARRL Hurricane webinar, held Monday evening, July 15th. According to the ARRL letter, a total of 410 people, many of them radio amateurs, participated in the event. This was the highest attendance ever for an ARRL webinar, administered by ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager Mike Corey, KI1U. Those attending heard presentations on a number of topics, including an overview of the 2013 hurricane season forecast and the role of IRLP and Echolink in disaster communications by veteran Skywarn volunteer Rob Macedo, KD1CY. For those who missed it, the webinar has been posted for download at the ARRL's website. You'll find it in cyberspace at www.arrl.org/public-service-resources. The ARRL says that receiver interference immunity standards are not needed nor of value to ham radio. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
Responding to an FCC call for comments based in part on recommendations in a Technological Advisory Council white paper, the ARRL has told the FCC that establishing the so-called Harm Claim Threshold, or HCT, standards for receivers would not work in the amateur service. HCTs, expressed in field strength or power flux density, would specify the level of radio interference that receivers should be expected to tolerate before a radio service could claim harmful interference. Limits would be established throughout a given service's assigned frequency range, as well as within certain frequencies outside that range. But in its filing, the ARRL argues that there is a need for a minimum, perhaps even mandatory, receiver performance standards for home electronic devices. But the amateur service should not be subject to the same type of receiver immunity standards. The League's comments note that any performance standards for amateur service receivers would be purely arbitrary and would comprise the experimental purposes of the amateur radio service. The ARRL says that hams have the technical knowledge to differentiate between interference from spurious or out-of-band emissions from nearby transmitters and that caused by receiver deficiencies. In other words, the suggested standards would be of little or no value to receivers designated to operate in or near the amateur service bands. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The complete ARRL filing is on the web at tinyurl.com/hct-not-needed-by-hams. With you 52 weeks a year, every year since 1977, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WD6 HFR repeater, serving San Diego, California. Vandals have brought down a multi-use transmission tower east of the San Francisco Bay Area. The structure is the site for microwave links, land mobile radio, cellular telephone, and an APRS digipeater. According to the East Bay Regional Park District Police, the guy wires that supported the structure located on Rocky Ridge near the city of Danville were intentionally cut, causing it to collapse early Tuesday, July 30th. Park Police Lieutenant John King said the vandal or vandals went through a lot of effort to topple the tower. He explained that it was in an area not easily accessible and that the criminal or criminals involved had to get through several gates to reach the site. Nobody was injured in the downing of the 50-foot-high antenna support structure. Police are continuing the investigation of the incident. They ask anyone with information to contact them at area code 510-881-1833. According to a post by a ham on Facebook familiar with the area, losing that tower will have a big impact on radio coverage in the cities of Danville, San Ramon, and along the Interstate 680 corridor. More laws to curb patent trolling appear to be on their way, this as Representatives Blake Fahrenthold of Texas and Hakeem Jeffries of New York introduced the Patent Litigation and Innovation Act of 2013 in the United States House. Amateur Radio Newsline's Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, has the details.
This is the sixth piece of legislation unveiled this year to address concerns about patent trolls and features some provisions that were incorporated in the earlier bills. This includes forcing an infringement accuser to reveal more about who is actually bringing the suit, including details about their patent claims, as well as limiting discovery. A big difference between H.R. 2639 and its predecessors is this measure would permit manufacturers to essentially take over a case against an end user accused of patent infringement. As such, the bill adds transparency and legitimacy to the thousands of cease and desist letters sent out by patent trolls. According to the National Economic Council and the Council of Economic Advisors, patent trolls can threaten to sue a few or thousands of companies at once without specific evidence of infringement against any of them. Some create shell companies that make it difficult for defendants to know who is suing them and assert that their patents cover inventions not imagined at the time they were granted. Last May, the White House said that it was taking several steps to curb patent abuse and that the administration is ready to work with Congress to resolve the problem. I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
Ham radio operators who produce podcasts dealing with the hobby have a vested interest in this matter due to an ongoing issue involving a company that claims it owns rights to the podcasting concept and has brought suit against several high-profile users in various areas of broadcasting and technology over what that company claims to belong to it. The Northern California DX Club has presented an $8,000 check to the Northern California DX Foundation, this to assist in continuing the foundation's work in fostering DX and DXpeditions where needed. The foundation says this is the largest donation that it's ever received from a club. It says the monies will help to provide critical funding to DXpeditions high on the most wanted list. It adds that without this type of support that such DXpeditions might not be possible. The Northern California DX Club was founded on October 10, 1946. The beneficiary of its generosity, the Northern California DX Foundation, is a private, nonprofit organization founded in 1972. Its purpose is to assist worthwhile amateur radio and scientific projects with funding and equipment. More details and a photo of the check being presented is on the web at www.ncdxf.org and www.ncdxc.org. Some good news for a nation where ham radio is reemerging. The Yasme Foundation Board of Directors has approved a grant to be used to purchase amateur radio transceivers for three members of the Ethiopian Amateur Radio Society. This so that these hams can satisfy the requirements of the Ethiopian licensing process. Ethiopia came back on the air May 30, 2011 with the reopening of the Ethiopian Amateur Radio Society station ET3AA. To support the reestablishment of amateur radio in that nation, the Yasme Foundation issued a grant to pay the fees associated with license examinations for 25 members of that club. Many were successful, but under Ethiopian regulations could not receive a license without proof of ownership of an amateur radio station. This latest Yasme grant is a step in getting individual Ethiopian hams back on the air. The Yasme Foundation Board has also announced that it's made a grant to support further development of ViewProp. This is a new utility for propagation visualization developed by Rick Kiesig, ZL2HAM. ViewProp integrates information from the reverse beacon network and worldwide spotting networks with station location information from QRZ.com and mapping through DX Atlas. The result is a real-time, worldwide view of amateur radio signals and overall ham radio operation. ViewProp also supports a playback function to review historical data and provides the user with a number of options to configure both the input data stream and the way in which the information is displayed. Currently in beta testing by a global users group, the YASME grant will enable ZL2HAM to complete development with the appropriate networked software tools and release it for public use. The YASME Foundation is a not-for-profit corporation organized to conduct scientific and educational projects related to amateur radio. More about it is on the web at www.yasme.org. Monitoring Times magazine will cease publication at the end of the year. This, as publisher Bob Grove, W8JHD, tells contributors in an email that after 33 years, he and his wife Judy have decided to retire. In his notice, Grove said that a combination of a downturned economy, as well as the ready availability of free listening and technical information on the Internet, has reduced sales and subscriptions throughout the marketplace. Therefore, Monitoring Times will be shutting down all operations after its December 2013 issue. The impending closure of Monitoring Times leaves CQ Publishing's Popular Communications as the only national magazine serving the burgeoning shortwave listeners, CBers, and scanning enthusiasts market. Some names in the news. First off, Australian aviator and entrepreneur Dick Smith, VK2DIK, who made the first solo helicopter flight around the world 30 years ago. The journey, which ended July 22, 1983, was the subject of an unforgettable Wireless Institute of Australia centenary speech given by Smith at his Boilly Flying Club. During the talk, he highlighted the dangers of the Japan to Alaska leg that included the finding and landing on a container ship to refuel. Smith also noted that it was amateur radio that assisted him to circumnavigate the globe and on other occasions, including his famous balloon flight in February of 2000. According to a posting by Art Bell, W6OBB, on Facebook, he'll be returning to nighttime talk radio this fall, but you won't be hearing him on your AM or FM dial. Bell's new program will be part of the SiriusXM satellite subscription program lineup. More information was provided in an article on the BigStory.com website. It says that a SiriusXM company representative contacted Bell through social media a few months ago. This in turn led to the creation of Bell's new show to be titled Art Bell's Dark Matter. SiriusXM says that Bell will talk about things like UFOs, ghosts, near-death experiences, and the weird aspects of science. Also, that he'll do interviews and take calls from listeners. Like in years past, the show will originate from Art's property in Nevada. SiriusXM is reportedly in the process of building a new studio facility for him to originate from. Meantime, back on Facebook, W6OBB posted that he could not say a word until now. He added that he tried to tell his followers on Facebook that it was coming without spilling the beans because he'd been sworn not to. He also directed those interested to see his website, artbell.com, for more details. You can read the in-depth BigStory.com article at tinyurl.com/WSOBB-returns-2-talk-radio. An oldie but a goodie from radio's recent past. If you've ever had the chance to listen to the Voice of America shortwave station that operated from Delano, California, and can recall its booming signal up and down the West Coast and out into the Pacific, here's a story of how it came about. Also, the way it operated for 63 years and its final nondescript sign-off at 0330 UTC, October 28, 2007. And there's even an amateur radio tie-in when one of the station's 200-kilowatt federal radio transmitters showed up on the ham radio airwaves calling CQ. Now, we won't spoil it for you by telling you more. Just make yourself a snack. Sit back, relax, and take your web browser to tinyurl.com/the-voa-delano-story. for a great evening of reading. This is news for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. An interesting story from down under. Australia is known as a very big island nation. At its geographic center, 1,500 kilometers from the coast, is Alice Springs, which hosts the famous Henley-on-Todd Regatta each August, albeit on a usually dry riverbed. What does this have to do with ham radio, you ask? Well, Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Asick, K9BIK, has the answer.
Those living in Australia's Northern Territory, and many visitors that pass through, take the annual regatta, which began in 1962, very seriously. In fact, there will likely be some 3,000 people on hand witnessing the event. There's an interesting story how this location, which is one of the driest parts of Australia, connects with ham radio, and also why it deserves a registration in this year's International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend. It's solely because of the Alice Springs Lighthouse located there. Greg Mayer, VK8GM, explained, that with the help of the Henley Ontad team, a lighthouse has been built to promote the spirit of amateur radio and lighthouses. Now the Alice Springs Lighthouse joined hundreds of others around the world. This year it's pretty certain to attract the attention of local, national, and international news media. After all, there are not very many lighthouses out in the desert anywhere on the planet. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Essek, K9BIK, halfway around the world in Zion, Illinois.
If you want to register a lighthouse, lightship, or marine beacon in this year's event, visit www.illw.net. This year's International Lighthouse and Lightship event takes place August 17th and 18th with almost 300 lit locations on the air. The South African Radio League says that it will activate a new propagation beacon on 5.250 MHz by the end of August. Its transmitter will be programmed to send signals at regular intervals, and radio amateurs who have the proper software will be able to record these signals automatically on their computers. The software to be used is called ALE. It's described as a complex communication standard, also known as MIL-STD-188-141, and USA government standard FED-STD-1045. In past usage, it had been limited to expensive military and commercial equipment with built-in controllers. All of that changed with the development of software that runs on a personal computer and makes use of the system's sound card. Because of this, ALE is now in regular use by radio amateurs all over the world. The announcement of the new radio beacon was made at the Radio in Action Symposium held in Port Elizabeth on Saturday, July 27th. An article by Hans Kotze, ZS6BZP, that explains the full operation will be posted on the propagation research page at www.sarl.org.za. The popular English language Nordic HF conference will take place in Sweden August 12th to the 14th. Topics to be covered will include the design of software-defined radios, an ionospheric chirp sounder for HF propagation analysis, creation of applications of advanced VLF, LF, HF digital signal processing in the amateur radio service, and numerous other offerings. The conference first took place in 1986 and initially was planned for a limited audience of Nordic countries. It's now held every 3 years and has grown steadily to a point where it now has international acclaim. More information, including a complete program and speaker listing, is on the web at nordichf.org. A missing satellite has announced its return. After 113 days of silence, DK3WN reported hearing Strand 1 and decoding telemetry. Spacecraft has been silent since March 31st. Strand 1 transmits on a frequency of 437.568 MHz. Further reports from others hearing the bird would be welcome. You can send them by email to cpbridges@surrey.ac.uk. On the air, members of the Mexican Federation of Radio Experimenters will be operating from the resort city of Cancun October 2nd to the 7th using the special call sign XE3FMRE. This to celebrate the National Convention FMRE 2013. Operation will take place on 80 through 6 meters using CW, SSB, RTTY, PSK31, and possibly WSJT. QSL the event via XE1LM. Also keep an ear open for Netherlands special event station PA6SAIL to be active between August 19th and September 10th. This to support the maritime event Sail de Ruyter at Vlissingen. Operation will be on the HF band using CW, SSB, PSK, and RTTY, as well as various times and modes on 6 and 2 meters. A special QSL card will be issued for working this call sign. QSL via PA3GEO, either direct or via the Bureau. Bill Moore, NC1L, the awards branch manager of the ARRL, has announced a plethora of operations that have been approved for DXCC credit. These are the 2013 4S7NZG operation from Sri Lanka, the current W4XR expedition in Laos, the one-day July 9th Z80ID operation from the South Sudan, and the 2012 and 2013 9M4SLL operations from the Spratly Islands. Also now approved is the 2010 through 2011 9Q6CC operation from the Democratic People's Republic of the Congo, the 2013 XW0YJY outing from Laos, the 2013 9X0EME from Rwanda, and the 60LA from Somalia. Last but by no means least, the 2012 T6JM operation from Afghanistan. According to NC1L, if you've had any of these rejected in a prior application, send a note to bmoore@arrl.org to be placed on the list for an update to your record. Also, please note the submission date and or reference number where the rejection was noted to expedite the search for any rejected QSOs. In DX, TU5DF will be on the air from the Ivory Coast until sometime in October. His operation is 40 through 6 meters using CW with some SSB and PSK31. QSL via F5 SWB. UX0HX, UZ1HZ, and UT5UY will be active from Namibia, signing stroke V5 from August 1st to the 8th. Their operation will be on 80 through 10 meters using SSB and CW. QSL each operator's home call, either direct or via the Bureau. EA4GBA will be operational from Mozambique through December 27th, signing C91GBA. He's reported to be active on all of the high-frequency bands on SSB. However, no operating schedule has yet been announced. QSL his home call direct only. DL1AL is now active as 5A1AL from near Tripoli, Libya. His operation so far has been on 40, 30, 20, and 6 meters using CW. He recently told the Ohio Penn DX newsletter that he will eventually be active on the HF bands and 6 meters using CW and SSB. He also plans to try PSK, but at this time the modem doesn't work. No matter, whichever way you make contact, please QSL via DL1AL. HB9ARY is currently operating stroke 3B8 from Mauritius Island. He's reportedly active on all of the high-frequency bands, QSL to his home call sign. And lastly, DL7BC will be on the airstroke FH from Mayotte between March 21st and April 4th of 2014. Operations will be on 20 through 10 meters, with 40 meters also a possibility. He plans to participate in the 2014 CQ Worldwide WPX SSB contest, signing TO7BC, QSL via his home call sign, direct or via the Bureau. And from our emerging technology file comes this story. A new writing instrument that warns its user when it thinks that he or she is about to make a mistake. No, we're not kidding, as we hear from Wireless Institute of Australia's Carl Herbert, VK3 LED.
The New Indian Express has reported on the invention of a new pen, which will vibrate if it senses that the writer is making a spelling mistake or his or her handwriting is messy. The brainchild of two German entrepreneurs, Lernstift, which means learning pen in German, is a regular pen with real ink, but it has a special motion sensor inside and a small battery-operated Linux computer with a Wi-Fi chip, which allows the pen to recognize specific movements, letter shapes, and a wide assortment of words. It vibrates if the user is not careful with letters or writes inelegantly. Arguably, it will be able to correct those whose dependence on spell checks and typing has played havoc with their spelling and handwriting. But it is doubtful how many of we adults use a pen these days, even a fancy one that vibrates. I'm Cole, VK3 LED.
Now the only thing this pen needs is to find a way to convince the buying public that it's something that it really needs. With more and more people turning to PCs, tablets, and smartphones for texting, that job may not prove easy. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, TWIT TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline at arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in South Mississippi, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013. All rights are reserved.